Imagine that we are going to promote Istanbul Protocol, and we are going to address people who have no idea what it is. How would you explain this to these people? What is Istanbul Protocol and what is it good for?
Okay, let me begin by saying that we have today international laws that totally prohibit the torture and other cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatments or punishments, and that make every state to have the obligation also to prohibit, to investigate, to criminalize torture, and to bring perpetrators of torture to justice, and also to compensate victims. But the fact is that there is a striking contrast between law and reality. And there are torture in almost every country in the world, and sometimes also appalling conditions in every country of the world that can amount to torture. So the Istanbul Protocol, it's a group of guidelines that are very good for the investigation and documentation of torture. And we need to investigate and document torture for several reasons, but in the end, to try to eradicate torture. I know that it will be an utopic objective, but that's the final objective, try to eradicate torture. So the Istanbul Protocol gives us a group of guidelines that are not obligatory guidelines, that are not fixed guidelines, but of course they are, don't like the word minimum standards. I think they are the necessary standards to do a good investigation and a good documentation of torture.
If you should describe the success or the experience of people who have already implemented or worked in a relation or in accordance with Istanbul Protocol, what have they reached or what have you reached?
I think they have reached a much better quality practice. What you need with protocols, and you have protocols in many areas of science, is to have those minimal standards or those necessary standards that you must fulfill in order to have conclusions and to achieve a certain standard. What Istanbul Protocol provides you, it's the guidelines, the main guidelines, to guarantee that what you achieve in Portugal, what you achieve in Nigeria, what you achieve in Uruguay, what you achieve in Indonesia, what you achieve in Australia, when assessing a victim of torture, will have the same quality standards. So it's a fundamental thing, because if not, everybody will do things in different ways. And we need to have common standards, we need to have common rules to do these kind of things. So the Istanbul Protocol gives to all the health professionals, but not only health professionals, to lawyers, to victims, etc., the guidelines, so they know how they should investigate, how they should monitorize, how they should document situations of torture.
The Europeans could imagine that the Istanbul Protocol in Europe is mainly utilized in asylum procedures. Is it like that? Is it used
in some countries? Unfortunately, yes. But Europe, like every other continent, is not immune to torture. There are situations of torture in Europe. I participate in several missions, in fact finding missions, and we have seen torture in several European countries, and especially there are also appalling detention conditions in Europe. And we must think that what the law forbids is not only torture, it's also cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment or punishment. And sometimes the conditions of detention, they can be cruel, inhuman, and degrading. And sometimes they can amount to torture. Sometimes it's worse to be submitted to certain conditions of detention for 5 or 10 years without a minimum of standards acceptable for a human being than to be submitted for half an hour or 45 minutes of interrogation to physical abuse. So we must take in consideration not only the physical and psychological abuse, but also the conditions of detention. And still we have in many countries in Europe appalling conditions of detention. And you have many cases, and some of them are in the reports of the Special Rapporteur on Torture. And of course, you still have conditions that could be very strongly criticized. For example, many, I will not say many, but several European countries, for example, the doctors that take care of the health situation in prisons, they are the recent doctors, and they do their training with the detainees. This is not acceptable from the human rights point of view. The detainees cannot choose their doctor, so they should not put young doctors during their training practice taking care of these kind of situations. You need a very specific training to be a health doctor in a detention facility.
And if a doctor, medical doctor, or a lawyer who has not yet worked with Istanbul Protocol asks you, how does it influence my everyday practice? What is it good for in my everyday job when I follow Istanbul Protocol?
It's totally good. It gives him the guidelines. It gives him the fundamentals, how we should do everything, how we, the national the International Code of Ethics, the ethical aspects. It gives him the legal guidelines for this kind of situations. It gives him all the indications how he should talk with a victim of torture, how he should make an assessment of the victim of torture, which kind of report he could expect from a forensic doctor or from an oath professional that makes the evaluation of a victim of torture. So it gives him all the information that he needs to begin to work in this field. And it's very well written, it's very comprehensive, it's very simple, it's very complete. Of course, it's not perfect, as every document, it could be improved in some areas, but it's a very good document, it's a very high standard document, and I will recommend to every professional involved in the area of torture and other cruel, human and degraded treatments or punishments to read the Istanbul Protocol. I think it's an essential document for people that are involved in this area.
We have heard that the unique thing about the Istanbul Protocol is that there are parts for doctors, lawyers, psychologists, and it's interconnected.
I must confess that I do not totally agree with that perspective. Okay. I think that all the six chapters of the Istanbul Protocol, they are important for every professional. I'm a medical doctor, and I think that I learn a lot from the legal chapter of the Istanbul Protocol. You have their information that is important for everybody that is involved. It's important for victims. It's important for organizations, for NGOs that are involved in this area. It's important for lawyers. It's important for magistrates. It's important for politicians. It's important for doctors. It's important for psychologists. And all the chapters, they have information that you can catch and that might improve your proceedings in this area.
This intersectional or cross-sectional aspect of Istanbul Protocol has been stressed very often when talking about Istanbul Protocol. But on the other hand, people tend to say if only lawyers and medical doctors cooperated more. What do you think the doctors to help the lawyers and vice versa?
That's true. That's still a lot to do. I think we have improved a lot the situation in this area of human rights in the last 10 years, 20 years. I think that the situation today has nothing to see with the situation 10 or 20 years ago, but there is still a lot of work to do. Especially, we still need to introduce the learning of the Istanbul Protocol, for example, at undergraduate level, in the faculties of law, in the faculties of medicine, to train the future doctors, to train the future psychologists, to train the future lawyers in the knowledge and in the use of the Istanbul Protocol. I think that there is still lots of things to do in this area, but as I told you, there are large improvements, and today we have a much broader and intense knowledge of the Istanbul Protocol than 10 years ago, for example, where the majority of people never heard about it. But of course, this also came from the recognition from the international organizations about the Istanbul Protocol. I think that the recognition by the United Nations, the recognition by the International Committee of Red Cross, the recognition by the Organization of the American States of the importance and of the potential of the Istanbul Protocol were fundamental things for this new knowledge and this new importance of the Istanbul Protocol.
The RTIP project, our project, is mainly about awareness raising, but we also developed some materials for trainees and trainers of the Istanbul Protocol. But it's not like that if you have just read the Istanbul Protocol, you become a trainer. So I can imagine that we can make many professional associations in many countries interested. But how do they approach people who are actually going to train them? What would you recommend to someone who is interested?
First, you need to know the principles. And the Istanbul Protocol gives you the principles, how you should act and what you should expect from people that act in this area. Then you need the experience. And of course, if you want to give training, you need people that know the Istanbul Protocol, but you need people that have been in the field, that have applied the Istanbul Protocol in their daily practice or in their regular practice. Lawyers, forensic experts like me, forensic psychiatrists, etc. And so you need to make this training, you need to have these people inside, people that show how really you can apply the Istanbul Protocol, not only with theory, but also with practical cases, showing the difference between just knowing things and between applying them in practice. I think that will be fundamental to have people with a strong experience in the use of the Istanbul Protocol to give these kind of trainings. And of course, then it's just a question of letting people time to use it too and to apply it. Of course, when I begin to apply the Istanbul Protocol, I'm sure I made some mistakes. I sure didn't use the Istanbul Protocol with all the potential that the Istanbul Protocol has. But things came with time. In my time, there was no training courses with Istanbul Protocol. There was no training, no specific training in this area. I learned from all other persons that have experience, from other colleagues. And I think that, for example, today I can transmit my experience, and I've been involved in more than 25 missions applying the Istanbul Protocol in the five continents. So I think you should profit from people with a large experience in the field to try to transmit to the new generations and to those that are interested in making a career and working in this area, so they should know how to apply it in practical situations. Even because the Istanbul Protocol is composed by these guidelines, but these guidelines, as the Istanbul Protocol say, they should be adapted according to the specific circumstances in which you are applying the Istanbul Protocol. It's a very flexible document, and this is a very good principle for the document.
And my last question, and it's the least formal question, if you should think about the most interesting experience you have made with the Istanbul Protocol or people around the Istanbul Protocol, some story or some aspect that really made you think this is a unique memory and I keep it.
I must confess that I will have difficulties to find a unique memory. As I told you, I work in this area for several years, and I have been in many countries working in cases of torture. And I think that every case of torture is a unique experience. I think that every case has its specificities, its singularities, and it's very difficult for me to choose one case. Of course, there are cases that can mark you more profoundly when you see so large injustice, when we see so large suffering that is being committed. And sometimes you really become astonished how the human being can be able to provoke such a profound suffering. But I've been in countries that impressed me a lot. I mean, for example, I work mainly with the Special Rapporteur of the United Nations on torture. And from the visits that I've made with him, some countries impressed me a lot. And probably the most big impression came from the visit to Nigeria, where torture was almost a routine practice. And the Istanbul Protocol was really a very good instrument to use there, knowing how to document, and it helped give me a great help how to real document things to be used later for the presentations before the General Assembly of the United Nations, for the presentations before the government.
Is there a common feature of people who implement the Istanbul Protocol, or who have created it, or who work with it? Do you think there is something that that links you all?
I think so. I think there is the way of thinking, the way of acting, the way of living. I think all those people involved, they are people that try to fight for a better world, and we should never give up of fighting for our ideals and for our beliefs. And even if I know that it will be impossible to totally eradicate torture, because who applies justice is human beings. Human beings, sometimes they fail. Of course, we will never eradicate her, but we can reduce torture a lot. There is still a lot that can be done. And I think all the people that work in this area, they are united by this common ideal of having a better world.
Thank you so much.
Okay.